This is the sixth Easter service that I've been part of really organizing and planning and leading. And when I first started doing it, something really struck me as sadly very, very funny. I remember the very first Easter service I led, and I started, we had this responsive reading that required the congregation to say something like, "Christ the Lord is risen indeed." And I think it was a baptism, so I was back there, so I was allowed to giggle. And I was back there, and I heard the congregation respond, "Christ the Lord is risen indeed." I went, "Wow, Easter's special, isn't it?" You know, it was like we almost like we've lost amazement at Jesus having risen from the tomb. And I think maybe we have. I think maybe we're so used to it. I mean, it's not a new story. We've been telling the story for more than 2,000 years. It's not a new story. We're pretty used to it, right? Christ the Lord is risen indeed. We know he tragically died on the cross. And on Good Friday, we feel all of that emotion because we don't go to the cross all that often. But the whole resurrected Jesus, the whole idea that people went to this tomb to finish the burial process, to pay homage to this rabbi, this leader, this person who had loved them when nobody else did, and he wasn't there, and there were angels there, and the angels are going, "He's risen. Death couldn't hold this guy. He's risen, and because he's risen, you will rise again as well." And we go, "Yep, heard that before. Tell me something I don't know. Let's move on." And I was wrestling with this. How do we keep Easter fresh? How do we keep the whole idea of the resurrection fresh for ourselves? So that we wake up Easter morning and rather than just being so excited that there's chocolate hidden around the house, we're actually excited that the tomb is empty. The ancient Greek philosopher Plato came up with this thing called the allegory of the cave. Some of you will have heard this before. It's a fabulous, fabulous allegory. And so I'm going to invite you to enter into it with me. I'm going to kind of put it in my words as opposed to his words. Not that Plato's words weren't marvelous, but I do better when I put it into my words. It's going to require some imagining. An allegory asks us to imagine something. And I've purposely not put the picture up on the wall because I want you to use your imaginations. I want you to use your mind's eye. If it helps you to close your eyes so that you can picture this as I describe it, then please go ahead and do that. But keep an ear out for your neighbor. If they start to snore, just poke them. And then we will move on with this kind of thing. Steve, I was thinking of you when I said that. So it's called the allegory of the cave. So if you would, please, just imagine with me for a moment. Imagine that you are at the mouth of an underground cave. And you decide you're going to go into the cave. So you walk through the entryway, and almost immediately there's a steep descent to go down to the base of the cave. And so you start making that walk, and you walk down the descent into this cave, and it gets darker and darker, but slowly your eyes are adjusting to all the shades of gray that are all around. When you get down into the cave, you see there seated people, a whole group of diverse people, all sorts of shapes and sizes and ages and colors, all sitting there, all facing one direction, and they look like they've been there their whole lives. They don't look unhappy or anything like that. They're just sitting as if they've been there for as long as they can remember. You look a little bit closer and you see that there are chains around their legs and chains around their necks. Now, these aren't chains that are choking them or killing them or hurting them in any way. They're just there. And they're stopping the people from being able to stand up and walk out or move around. They're stopping them from being able to look around. They can't look behind them and see what's back there. They're just stuck with whatever's directly in front of them. And you look, and behind these people, up, raised up high, but behind them, there's a blazing fire. And between the fire and the people, there's a low wall. It looks kind of like the kind of thing that people who use like those marionette puppets would walk, like a screen that they would walk those puppets in front of, that kind of a height of a wall. And going back and forth across the top of this wall are men and women carrying animals and figurines and different kinds of vessels and statues and things like that, moving them back and forth across this wall. Some of the men and women are speaking as they do this. Some of the men and women aren't speaking at all when they do this. The fire behind is casting shadows of everything that's going on in the wall onto the wall that the chained people are facing. What they see are shadows. Imagine with me now that you were one of those people. You're sitting there. The chains don't hurt. You're not even really aware of them. They're just there. They've been there your whole life. And you see in front of you all sorts of activity. Animals and people, and because of the echo in the cave, you sometimes hear sounds coming. You don't know that it's coming from behind you. It's bouncing off, and it kind of seems attached to these figures you see on the wall ahead of you. Everything that you see is gray and different shades of gray, but you're okay with that. And once in a while, you pause, and you think, is this it? Is this all there is? Going to go a different direction with this than Plato went, because I think that some of us are living our lives as if we live in that cave. And every once in a while we pause and we think, is this it? Is this all there is? We don't know that it's all gray because it's just what is for us. But do you ever find that you're so caught up in the cycle? You're getting up in the morning, you're making breakfast, you're getting the kids to school, you're going off to your job, you're working like crazy at your job, you come home, you get supper ready, you maybe have to take kids out somewhere else, or you have meetings to go to that night, and you get home and you watch a couple hours of mindless television, and then you go to bed, and then you wake up in the morning, and it all happens all over again? Do you ever stop and think, is this it? Is this all there is? And here's the thing, it's not all there is. It's not all there is. Easter is the story that tells us this is not all there is. Easter is the story of Jesus who lives outside of that cave, coming down into the depths of that cave, a cave which for all intents and purposes is like a tomb, and saying, I have the key to undo your chains. And then you can come with me. It's going to be a hard walk up that ascent and out the cave, but you can experience what life is meant to be. You can see color. You think you're seeing color now. Wait till you get out into the sunlight. You think you can see now. Wait till you get out into the sunlight. You think this is life, these shadow puppets across the wall in front of you? Wait till you get to engage in life. Wait till you get to actually make a difference in your world and change the world that you live in. Some of us are living in a cave. We're living in a tomb, as if the stone is still rolled across it, as if Jesus never rose from the dead, as if all there is to life are gray shadows, puppets on a wall, no real great meaning or purpose. And something in us whispers, there's got to be more than this. Some of you know there's more than this. Some of you a long, long time ago, some of you not so long ago, made the decision that you were going to come unchanged and you were going to walk out of that cave. And out you went and you walked up that and you blinked really hard because the sunlight was hard to take after a lifetime living in shadows. And you looked around and you couldn't believe you had ever been satisfied with what was there in the cave. You couldn't believe you ever thought that was life. And so out you go and you step into the world and God is at your side saying, look at the life I have for you, a life of incredible abundance. And you settled for that. And you're going, oh God, take me wherever you want me to go. And the years go on and on and on. And we discover that we just stopped somewhere up the ascent and never really made it out the mouth of the cave. Because we got somewhere better. It was more light. We were engaged. We weren't chained. And we think, this is good. I'm going to stay here for a while. This is not all there is. Some of us have gotten all the way out and we went, oh, that's exciting, but I need a little break. So I'm going to go back in the cave for a rest. I know it sounds dumb. Doesn't that sound dumb? But that's what we do. That's what we do. We think, it's too exciting out here. I can't handle this. God wants all of this from me. I think we get scared because God calls us into things that are bigger than us and that are more than we can do on our own. And we're tired from the busyness and the cycle that goes on and on and on in our life. And when God says, you're going to change the world, you and me, baby, we're going to change the world. You know what? Could you just go to someone else? Because I got enough on my plate right now. Don't you know the kids are in soccer? And I said I'd coach this year, and I don't know how to coach soccer. You know, this is what we do. We grab on to a life of shadow puppets instead of the life that God wants for us. Jesus Christ died and went into the tomb to come and get us. Because that's where we've been living. We call it life, but it's just living until we die. It's a living death. We live our lives in a tomb. And Jesus Christ was on the cross, and he died so that he too could come into the tomb and get us and say, this isn't all I have for you. I have something incredible, something astonishing. I came that you would have life in abundance. I came that you would see everything in high def color. I came that you would experience what it means to have a grand purpose in your life. You can change the world. You can go back down into that cave, but only to help me get other people and bring them back out so that they can see what life could really be. This is our Easter choice. We can settle for living our lives in a tomb, which isn't life at all. Or we can grab on to the life that Jesus Christ offered when he walked out of that tomb and held out his hand and said, are you going to come with me? Caitlin's being baptized in a little bit this morning. And she's being baptized because she's decided that she doesn't want to live her life in a tomb. She's decided that she wants her life to matter and mean something. And she knows that that mattering and that meaning is so limited when it's in the gray and the shadows of the tomb and only can be fully realized when she grabs onto Jesus' hand and says, I'm coming with you. You're going to lead me somewhere really scary. I know that. If you hadn't made that decision yet, let me tell you, he's going to take you somewhere scary. But it's going to be the most incredible place you have ever been. It's worth the pain your eyes feel at first when you start looking at the light. It's worth the discomfort of the routines and the daily grind having to be put aside. This is the Easter invitation, and this is what makes Easter so extraordinary. We don't have to live our lives in a tomb. The tomb is empty. Jesus Christ is risen, and so can you. And it's not just about rising after you die. This is about life now, here. It's about living a life that matters now, here. This is what Easter's all about. And I just ask you where you are and what's stopping you from embracing the life God would have for you.